And right now I'm very happy to introduce to you Akine Freechild. She's senior coordinator with Public Citizens Democracy is for People campaign. And last Friday and over the weekend, Public Citizen and a coalition of other groups across the nation sponsored what was called Money Out, Voters In Day of Action in more than 75 cities and towns. And Akine, thank you, first of all, for being here with us tonight. And you can tell us a little bit about the program you work with, Democracy is for People campaign.
Having me, it's a pleasure. So we're just starting to wrap up this incredible day of action for Money Out, Voters In. I work for a campaign called Democracy is for People, as you mentioned, at Public Citizen, which is really committed to passing a constitutional amendment to overturn the Citizens United ruling and past rulings that make it very difficult for us to limit the amount of money being spent in our elections. But the Money Out, Voters In Day of Action was framed around a much broader democracy movement that's gotten a lot of fire and fuel from the Citizens United amendment fight, but also is calling for voting rights and making sure that everybody is able to vote. You know, it's, if we have fair and free elections, but some of the folks aren't able to vote, what kind of democracy is that? And likewise, if everyone can vote, but the candidates are selected by the wealthy and the policies are set by the donors, it's not much of a democracy either. So the NAACP, Public Citizen, People for the American Way, Common Cause, and other groups came together to raise these two dual attacks against our democracy and raise some outcry and call for change, particularly in state policies on the voting rights and for an amendment on the national level.
Could you tell us a little bit about the coalition that's involved in the Money Out, Voters In Day of Action?
It's quite a fantastic and enormous coalition. I have to say there's many, many groups that are signed on to the Money Out, Voters In sort of letter of statement of common purpose, but there are 33 or 34 groups that were actually recruiting their members to come out onto the streets. And we had a second anniversary Day of Action last year that was much more of a money and politics flavor. This year, in addition to the NAACP, there was the Organic Consumers Association, 350.org, Sierra Club, LULAC, which is the League of United Latin American Citizens, so a lot of different National Women's Health Network, a lot of different groups who are seeing that money and politics is silencing them, and wanting to make their voices heard on the voting rights issue as well. So really a growing consensus that we need to overturn Citizens United. We need to defend our democracy and work together for that.
Today marks the third anniversary of the U.S. Supreme Court's ruling in the Citizens United versus Federal Election Commission case that you mentioned earlier that legalized unlimited and anonymous funding of election campaigns by corporations and the nation's wealthiest citizens. Akine, tell us, remind our listeners just a bit about the importance of that decision and how it's impacted our election campaign, especially this past November's.
It's been totally disastrous. It was a 5-4 ruling with a scalding dissent from Justice Stevens, who said, you know, money is not the same thing as speech under the First Amendment. It helps enable speech, but it's not the same thing as speech. And he accused the lead author, Justice Kennedy, of glittering generalities, likening corporations to people and money to speech, when in fact corporations are for-profit entities that are required to spend their money to further their bottom line. And so that sort of fundamentally engenders corruption. But the majority in the court in 2010 didn't see it that way. And so they allowed outside spending, not direct to candidates, but outside spending. And through that, in a following case called Speech Now, the creation of super PACs and unlimited outside spending by individuals. And unfortunately, because of a broken Federal Election Commission and the failure of Congress to pass even a basic disclosure rule, a lot of that money is secret. You can set up a shell corporation. We're not even, can't be legally all that certain that some of that money isn't coming from foreign entities, which is just a total disaster. That fallout has been appalling. $6 billion in the last election spent, about a sixth of that in outside spending, significant chunk of that unknown sources, and certainly even if you can trace the source because of limited disclosure regularity that's required, from super PACs, you might not find out who it gave $1 million to attack you in your last week of the election until well after the election is over. So you have no chance to defend yourself as a candidate. So it's further disinvesting folks from wanting to participate in our government. Without that, not much of a democracy.
What's the message of those who are protesting Friday through this past weekend? What's the message from people around the country who want to see this overturn? And how realistic is it that we can get a constitutional amendment that can overturn the Supreme Court decision in the Citizens United ruling?
The message is quite simple, I think. Money out, voters in means we're wanting to see less corruption from any source of money in our government. We want to see people again at the center of our government, and the way that the activists who have engaged on this are enacting that vision is often on the state level. We're seeing on the amendment movement side, the amendment for the U.S. Constitution to overturn the Citizens United ruling in other cases. City resolutions and ballot initiatives, 350 city resolutions and ballot initiatives from Chicago to Los Angeles to Philadelphia just announced they're going to do a ballot initiative. New York City, really large cities and small cities calling for a constitutional amendment. And then 11 states have called for a constitutional amendment, including the most recent were Colorado and Montana, not blue progressive states because the electorate is united in disliking Citizens United and seeing it as a source of corruption and wanting to see it overturned regardless of party affiliation. On the voters' in side of things, the attack has really come from the states. 25 states in the last 2 years passed restrictions on voting rights, be it voter ID, getting rid of same-day registration or early registration days, just making it harder and harder to vote. And the NAACP, the Lawyers Committee and Civil Rights and other groups, the Brennan Center jumped in and were able to block or weaken or roll back about 14 of those laws, but the rest of the states are moving forward. And so they may have not implemented the laws that, when they were first passed, would have disenfranchised up to 5 million Americans, kept them from voting. Now a lot of those laws are going into effect. So there's a fight at the state level for getting money out, for disclosure, as well as an amendment, and there's a fight for voting rights.
We're speaking with Akine Freechild tonight. She's a senior coordinator with Public Citizens Democracy is for People campaign. And Akine, I wanted to ask you, what are the tools that are at the disposal of groups challenging these voter suppression laws that, as you said, many of them were rejected by federal courts and otherwise put on hold? But many states are moving forward, again, as you said. And what is the tools, what can be done to make sure that everybody's got a right to vote and that specific demographic groups by age, by race, by gender are not turned away from the polls because of some obscure laws that really harken back to Jim Crow type of, monkey business with our voting system that we saw during the Civil Rights era?
Well, you posed so many of the answers in the question. I think NAACP and the Brennan Center and the Lawyers Committee are definitely much greater experts in this area than I am, but one of the big threats that we haven't mentioned is that the Supreme Court is taking up the Voting Rights Act this year, and there's been some hints, I don't want to speculate too much on the court, but that the ruling may not be in favor of the kind of provisions that have really protected the minority vote in the South. So there's concerns, although, clearly the court will rule as it will, that it may be the review of the southern states gerrymandering their districts or setting their districts by federal authorities may be challenged by this court, and that would reduce the number of districts where minorities are represented and, in fact, elected to Congress and in the states. So that's quite serious. But on the state level, depending on each state and the legislatures, it's a state fight, and every state should be vigilant in not only protecting themselves from attacks on voting rights, but also expanding them. It really should be automatic that you're registered to vote. It should be a fundamental right that everybody can take for granted, really, and go to the polls without worrying that they might have their ability or their eligibility questioned.
Now, as you said, the Supreme Court is going to be taking up this challenge to the Civil Voting Rights Act, and it could be disastrous. What's ironic and sad here is that we've seen, unlike I think any year before in the past several decades, challenges to people's rights to vote across the country in the northern states and southern states, primarily pushed by the Republican Party once they gain control of a state legislature. So it's odd timing to say, hey, we don't need the Voting Rights Act anymore, when the people who are trying to disenfranchise millions of Americans are hard at work to do that very thing now in 2013. These folks want to get rid of the Voting Rights Act. It's ironic and sad, as I said.
Yeah, my other concern after or beyond the Supreme Court is that after this election, folks may not have felt the full brunt of the laws that are now being implemented and may forget not only that this is the most expensive election in history, but the long lines and the different dirty tricks that were played, particularly targeting Latino voters, messages in Spanish saying the election was on a different day than it was actually being held, and other efforts to purge them from the rolls. Is just, hopefully we will not see a repeat of those things, but they're not, as you said, they're familiar tactics going all the way back to the Jim Crow era, so hopefully we can stay vigilant. I think that's really what this day is about. This is the last time folks are thinking about the election in such a real, raw way, and we want to remind them that there's so much more to be done if we don't want to see a repeat.
I've posed this question I'm about to ask you to other guests I've had on the program about this topic, and it's sometimes difficult to get a real specific answer here because it's not known, but we have 50 different sets of state laws, on voting rights. But it seems to me that, as in most other countries in the world, there are some specific standards that a state has to abide by in order to make sure people aren't disenfranchised. Are there any efforts going forward at the federal level to make sure there's some basic standards enforced and that we don't have the abuse of the law that we've seen particularly this past year, and for partisan political purposes, electoral laws put in place that are designed to turn people away from the polls?
Yeah, there are some national pushes, and Public Citizen is really a follower on voting rights policy. We're following the groups that I mentioned earlier, NAACP and others, but there is a suggestion that voting should be a constitutional right. It's not actually in the Constitution, and so amending the Constitution on that front has been one proposal that's been put out there, and there's also efforts to the Voting Rights and Restoration Act, that may not be the exact name of it, that have been proposed, and I think that those, you're right, it needs to be some kind of basal minimum right that's protected in this country. I just wanted to add in, if folks want to get involved in the amendment movement or in Money Out Voters In, you can check us out at citizen.org. It's CITIZEN.org.
Thanks. Yeah, we'll repeat that definitely in a moment or two. But Akine, I also wanted to ask you about maybe what we can learn from other nations around the world who certainly have practiced democracy as we do here for decades, and we need to really maybe learn some lessons as you talked about, universal registration, where you're not forced to scramble and jump through a lot of hoops in order to register to vote, but there's kind of an automatic registration at birth, and that you don't really have to sort of play the games that many of these states do to try and keep people from voting, prevent them from voting.
Right. We're able to make so many other things so easy. You can get an app on your phone, you can change your address in a couple seconds, maybe 30 seconds, but you need to go to a specific location with specific papers and register, and some of that is important and needed, and other pieces of it are antiquated and need to be updated.
So, well, there are nations around the world that do that very easily, and there's little manipulation at the part on the part of the competing political parties in those systems, and it's just kind of a given that people will have the right to vote, and however that falls, election to election, that's the way it'll work. But here, there's manipulation afoot, which is quite disturbing in 2013, especially in view of this particular day where we celebrate the struggles of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. To try to make sure that there's an even playing field for everyone in the country, regardless of their race, their religion, their age, or their gender. Struggles that have been going on for hundreds of years here in this country. Akina, I wanted to also ask you about something new that's kind of developed in recent months, and we've been hearing about efforts by some of these same Republican party-controlled state legislatures that are moving to change how states allocate electoral votes in future presidential elections, which would provide an advantage for the Republicans in particular, who've gerrymandered dozens of states' congressional districts, and I believe they're predicating the allocation of electoral votes in future presidential elections on these gerrymandered districts. So I think I saw one estimate that if electoral votes have been allocated on the basis of, you know, how people voted in various congressional districts, that you know, Mitt Romney would have likely won this election, while Barack Obama would have won the popular vote overwhelmingly. So it's a distortion, a deliberate distortion that's being attempted here. Have you been following that at all?
I have been reading some of the same news articles you're referring to, but I'm not an expert in the area, so I probably won't weigh in too much there. I did want to loop back on some of your comments about inequality and equal opportunity that President Obama touched on in his inauguration speech on Martin Luther King Day, and just hint at one of the reasons why I think the coalition has grown so large for Money Out Voters In, because we see in the data that wealthy individuals and certainly corporations without a doubt do not have the same interests and values as the average American voter, or perhaps any person if you're talking about a corporation. And it's really quite sad and disturbing that money in politics actually discourages lower-income folks from going out and even voting. There's some data that shows that people who make under $35,000 a year are less likely to show up at the polls because they feel that there's so much money in the process. And we certainly know that without wealthy friends and donors, it really discourages all but the wealthiest folks to even try to run for office in the first place. So this is really an issue of deep inequality when you look at the priorities of the donor class, which is less than 1%, far, far less than 1%, when you look at the large donors who really make or break these advertising campaigns. You know, their priorities are with deficits. Their priorities are with issues that don't place necessarily at the top of the average American's list of issues, like recovering the economy and jobs. And you see that reflected in the debate in the national policy. Another interesting piece that was totally left out of the election, the presidential election and debates, was climate change. And we also happened to see Chevron give $2.5 million in the federal elections this year and $1.2 million in the Richmond City Council races in California. Richmond, California is where Chevron is headquartered, and they are trying to weigh in heavily on local politics, and I think often we think of federal elections, but the amount of money a corporation can spend in a local election is just astonishing, where folks are used to spending maybe $10,000, maybe $40,000 at most, and then you have a corporation spend that kind of money. Well, they didn't succeed in Richmond, California, and one of the 100 events that we had around this weekend was the mayor of Richmond coming out and rallying with hundreds of others in front of the Chevron facility and saying, this is not acceptable. This is not how we run a democracy.
Akine, as we conclude here, maybe you could tell our listeners, what's the most effective way to get involved in these struggles to get big money out of politics, uncontrolled, unaccountable, and anonymous money as a result of the Citizens United case? What can people do that will have an impact?
Well, definitely look us up on citizen.org and sign the petition so we can get in touch with you about local organizing. You definitely want to look up local groups in your area, or you can email us at amendment@citizen.org. It's amendment@citizen.org, and we can help you find people who are already organizing near you, or you can start a group. Passing local resolutions is a great first step. It's a wonderful way to build a network that's enduring, and then working it up. You know, citizens have really led the way in states like New Jersey, calling for an amendment and passing state resolutions, and then you get the whole congressional delegation from your state on board. It's quite powerful.
Well, this is certainly a struggle that's ongoing, and we'll look forward to talking with you and others at Public Citizen and the other coalition members who are bringing this fight forward on overturning the Citizens United decision and the voter suppression laws and the upcoming struggle that may happen in the aftermath of a Supreme Court overturning of certain provisions of the Voting Rights Act. All sort of big fights ahead. So thanks so much for spending time with us tonight on this Martin Luther King Day holiday, Akine, and we'll look forward to talking to you again soon.
Thanks for having me.
Give the website one more time, just so we can make sure people write it down.
Sure. It's citizen.org, CITIZEN.org. We are no less a democracy than the many years that came before. We've passed 27 constitutional amendments before. We can do this again for the sake of our democracy.
Thanks for all you do, Akine. Appreciate it, and have a good night. Thank you.
You too.
Bye-bye. Take care. Bye-bye. That's Akine Freechild, Senior Coordinator with Public Citizens Democracy is for People campaign.